Well, I'm here with Drew Hinesley. Drew is kind enough to jump back on the podcast with us, our only repeat guest so far. And Drew, great to catch up with you for a little bit.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on, bud. Really enjoyed it last time. Looking forward to this again.
Totally. Well, yeah, you know, Drew is a NBC correspondent, you know, caddy, you know, has a lot of history on all the tours. And so, Drew, you're actually going to be down there at Torrey Pines this week, starting tomorrow. Give us a little bit of insight about Torrey Pines North. You know, kind of describe the course and the layout, the land, for someone who's never been there.
Yeah, it's a fantastic place. One of my favorite places on the planet. You know, you hear a lot about, you know, being right there on the ocean. It does. It sits right on the cliffs. In La Jolla, California, right over the beach. You're probably, it places you're 40 feet above the beach. In other places, you're about 100 feet above the beach. It's just gorgeous views of the Pacific and the mountains of Southern California. The folks that only know it, you know, fans new to golf, or fans that, you know, only know it that are maybe in the American Southwest that watch the local tournaments, and they watch the Buick every year. Now the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. Folks that are old enough like me remember the Andy Williams event that it used to be called. That was what it was back in the 70s and 80s. That tournament in January is kind of a different event than what you're going to see this week. This is only the second time we've had a U.S. Open at Torrey, the first being, of course, the 2008 U.S. Open, which has gone down in history as one of the best majors ever. Yeah. It turned out to be a 19-hole playoff between Tiger Woods and Rocco Mediate, and Tiger ended up winning that, his last major before his 2019 Masters win. It's only the second time we played there, so everybody that watches it in January says, okay, well, they know the golf course. Yes, they know sight lines, and yes, you know routing, and you know how holes kind of move around the course, but it's a totally different golf course. It's very similar to Augusta National. They overseed Torrey Pines with ryegrass, so it really jumps out, really turns green. You see the mowing stripes and all that in January. It's not natural to that area. What is natural is a grass called kikuyu, and you see it a lot in Australia. You see it a lot in coastal areas. Kikuyu is basically serves as like a net. It's such a coarse, thick grass that it actually holds the land from falling into the ocean. So just to give you an idea how coarse the grass is, it actually kind of serves as a safety net, keeping the cliffs where they are and not falling into the Pacific. So that gives you an idea how tough the grass is, and it really thrives the drier it gets. And the week leading up to the U.S. Open and the week of the U.S. Open, there's absolutely zero rain forecasted. So the drier it gets, the stronger and more coarse and higher and more penal that rough gets. There's always already been a couple of videos of guys out there and their scouts last week kind of showing what the rough looks like, and it looks vicious. A totally different rough than what they see in January. In January, and a lot of folks that pay pretty close attention to golf may remember the Patrick Reed situation, where the ball went straight down in the grass. Patrick picked it up because he thought it was embedded, got a free drop, all that controversy. Well, this week, you won't really be able to go down and get the ball. Even if you're trying to pick it up for a drop, it's easy because the grass kind of gnarls itself around the ball. It's not quite as penal as Bermuda grass that a lot of folks in the southeastern United States understand, but it's pretty close. And it's really difficult. And the greens, being Poana, they will have them smooth and rolling great, you know, the early part of the week. But if you remember watching that Tiger Woods putt on the 72nd hole in 08, it turns into Plinko by the weekend. Poana grows at uneven levels throughout the day even. Little heads pop up, little circles of it pop up, and they turn purple and brown. And you're going to see a lot of it on the coverage. And some people think it looks dead. That's actually exactly how the USGA wants it. Come the weekend, it's going to be a browned out course, and the greens are going to be severely browned out. And so you're going to get that unevenness of putts. And Tiger actually has talked about it in the past. I actually caddied for Charlotta Sorenstam. And Annika would call Tiger whenever we were playing on the LPGA on Poana Greens. And Tiger would always say he tries to hit up a little bit on a ball that's on Poana greens to get it rolling quicker. Instead of hitting it normal and having that back spin and skid off the face, he tries to get it turning end over end a little quicker to have it roll a little truer on Poana. So there's little tricks like that that maybe some of the guys, the Australians, some of the California guys that grew up on those grasses can employ and maybe help them a little bit. But it's going to be totally different golf course than what you see in January. It's going to be a big U.S. Open test, long, straight, very, very traditional U.S. Open test. We had one last year at Wingfoot. One guy got the 6 under, but second place was even par. And I think you're going to see a similar thing this year. You know, Tiger and Rocco played off in 08 at 1 under par. I think you're going to see a very similar type of scoring come Sunday. I think 3 under held the lead after the first 3 rounds. And then 1 under led after 72. So you could see a similar thing this year. So if you're in a pool or you're watching things and somebody's at 4 under or even 5 under after the first couple of rounds, don't worry. It's going to come back closer to par by the end, maybe even over par for a champ this year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome that you brought up, Rocco and Tiger back in 08. I think the Golf Channel replayed that final round. I think it was like last Thursday night or something. And I think I had forgot how it just seemed like Rocco was like having so much fun in that situation, like as much as he could have been. But also he like couldn't help but just being in awe of Tiger. I think like even the interviews afterwards, he was like, I mean, you know, the guy had to birdie his final hole in regulation. Then he had to birdie his final hole in the playoff to, you know, continue play. He's like, nobody, no one else in the world can do that. You know, it's just like, and you're right. You know, a lot of that, a lot of the course, you know, looked very different than, you know, when it's played, you know, as the Farmers. So it'd be fascinating to see how that plays out.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun for me getting to know Matt Atkins, who caddied for Rocco at that U.S. Open. Matt, I consider him a close friend, and I've heard a lot of the stories behind that round and other rounds of Rocco, and Rocco is a very lovable character. He enjoyed himself that week, but, everybody that saw him, and Matt included, says that it was a ball-striking virtuoso performance from Rocco. It was just – it was going everywhere he was looking – every single time. And as with most guys that are known as ball strikers, the putter cooperates a little bit, they get on a run. And that's what happened that week with Rocco. He made some early on Thursday, made some big putts early on Thursday that kind of got him going, got him some confidence, and that just carried over the rest of the week.
Totally. When you look at the course specifically, you know, what are the, you know, maybe the holes on the front nine and then the holes on the back nine that you're going to really look out for?
Look out for as far as don't make big numbers?
Yeah, big numbers or numbers that you or holes that you think are gettable for the players.
Well, I mean, 1 and 2 are fairly gettable. You can maybe be, you know, 1 under par standing on the third tee. And when the pin's over on the right on 3, you can kind of – it's in a little bowl over there. You can kind of attack that one. The green kind of tilts, you know, left to right and a little towards the back from that front left corner. So anytime they put the pin on the left, you're just trying to get something on that segment. And if you hit it to the middle, maybe you just try to get a good 2-putt. But when it's on the right, you can actually look at 3 as a birdie hole. But then when you get to the fourth tee, is probably the hardest hole in the front nine. It may, you know, be eclipsed in scoring average by 6 because they'll convert 6 down from a par 5 down to a par 4 this week. So anytime you have a hole that's designed and meant to be played as a par 5 and you make the par 1 less, obviously scoring average, you know, if it's at 4.3 for the week, that's, you know, 0.3 of a shot over par, but that's pretty good as a par 5 scoring average. So 6 may be the toughest one on the front, but 4 is really hard. 5 you can get, but because it's sandwiched in between 2 very difficult 4s, it kind of adds a little pressure to that. Mm-hmm. Guys know that, okay, you know, here's my chance, and 7's a pretty tough, you know, dog leg left or right par 4. You can get kind of a hanger lie, the righties can, ball below your feet to a green that feeds away from you, and some really tough short game shots on 7. So when you're standing on 5 tee, you know, I need to hit the fairway here to give myself a chance because my next scoring chance isn't until the 9th hole. So that sometimes adds pressure to an easy hole. So you get 4, 5, 6, and 7 really tough stretch there in the middle of the front. And then when you get to the back, the 12th hole is always traditionally the hardest hole on the golf course, just straight out to the ocean. I think we're going to see mainly western breezes all week, which means that hole will play into the wind. And if it's from the southwest, it's a left to right wind, which, you know, guys do not like, and you're kind of on an elevated tee there playing down to the seaside. So again, a very hard hole. Par is a great score on 12. 13 is the par five we all know about. That can really, really be tricky as the greens get firm, because if you end up laying up, it's a pretty narrow little layup there at 13 down in the bottom of that hollow. And you're coming back up with a wedge, and the ball's going to hit a little quicker than you're used to, so it may have a little extra spin than you account for. And it's real easy to hit a couple down there on the same hole from the same spot. So it's not a layup par five by any means. And there's a new tee over by the glide port way over to the left. I don't think it was there in 2008, or at least it's been moved even further back and further to the left. So that'll be a new look for a lot of the fans that maybe don't watch the Farmers Insurance every year. 14 played as a drivable par four in 08. I'd love to see at least one day the USGA kind of move that tee up and let the guys do that again. The green sits right there on the edge of the cliff, and anytime the pin's in the back or on the left, guys are very defensive, but it's always kind of fun to see that pin up front and play as a drivable four and maybe see if, you know, you can bait somebody into making a mistake by not playing real smart. 15's a hard par four. 16's you're trying to make a par there, and 17's another hard par four before you get to the par five 18th. I mean, it's a great U.S. Open test. There's really no one set of holes. It's, you got to grind it the whole way. Again, one under one over 72 holes last time we had a U.S. Open there. So if you're looking at that and you're trying to gauge on what you need to do as a strategy, I mean, if I could shoot even par on any nine hole section of the course and maybe shoot one under here and there, I probably win the tournament. If you could shoot even par for 5 9 hole sets and shoot one under the other 3 9 hole sets, you may win by three shots.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. When you're thinking about, you know, players and, you know, the different facets of the game, whether it be, you know, a long ball hitter, good iron player, like what do you think is going to be most important at Torrey this week?
Maturity and patience is always, you know, always a great asset to have at a U.S. Open. Bryson showed a lot of that last year at Wingfoot, just being patient with where he was trying to hit the ball. We all knew about what he was trying to do with his driver, but he was able to hit his three wood in places other people weren't. And I'll give you an example. On the 11th hole on Sunday, I think Bryson hit a three wood, as did Matt Wolf. And Matt had, you know, 120 something into the green. Bryson had like 65 yards, both out of the rough, but Bryson had half the distance Matt did, was able to maybe play at an angle on the green where he could have a look at a birdie. He happened to make that putt on 12 for birdie, whereas Matt Wolf from 120 is kind of hitting your traditional, you know, gap wedge, maybe a sand wedge shot, and just hoping to get the right release. Whereas from 60 yards, Bryson can put a lot more spin on it, even coming out of the rough.
Yep.
And so, you know, you're gonna see a player that's super patient, that's gonna understand, you know, that you're gonna make bogeys. You may make a double. You know, Tiger, I think, doubled the first hole 3 out of 4 days, and 08 still won the tournament. So it's a really hard test, and you just got to keep plugging away. You can't go and kick your bag and throw your putter to the ground too often and expect to stay in it, because that stresses you out too. That expends energy. And it's a tough walk at Torrey, a lot of side hill lies. Coming in and out of those bunkers will stress out your knees and ankles. And you just need to be fresh over 72 holes. And the guys that can kind of stay steady, the guys that we've heard about recently talking about their mental game, Phil Mickelson, Xander Schauffele, guys like that, I think really can play well this week if they get it all lined up in their practice rounds, because they understand what this is going to be about. It's going to be a marathon, not a sprint. And again, it's going to be just a traditional U.S. Open test. Grind it out and see where you stand at the end. You know, not going to be a whole lot of scoreboard watching, especially early on, because it really doesn't matter what the other guys are doing. You got to complete your round. You've got to, keep going. You know, if you can shoot two under any one day, you're probably going to pass a lot of folks.
Yeah.
So if you're one or two over after the first round, you don't panic. You just say, hey, that two under round's coming. Let's just keep plugging away. And it's going to take that. So anybody that's getting too down on themselves or too high, you know, getting off to a good start, you know, those guys are probably not going to last very long. It's going to be an experienced players. I would expect we won't see a first time major winner this week. Again, the last time we had it here, the greatest player of all time was able to survive a lot of other guys. And in some cases, those guys have still yet to win a major. So it's going to be a survival test this week. And I expect it's going to be one of the heavy hitters will end up standing on top on Sunday night.
You know, back in 2020, one of the few events that wasn't impacted by COVID was the Farmers, and obviously Mark Leishman won in 2020. And then you had a stack of big names behind him: Rahm, McIlroy, Finau, Reed, Watson. And then, you know, in 2021, we saw Reed play well there again. You had Finau up top, Victor Hovland, Xander as well. Do you expect to see some of those names again up on top of the leaderboard this year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the top ranked players are there for a reason. They play major championship test well. That's where they get the most world ranking points. That's what gets these guys excited. Not to say the Byron Nelson doesn't, you know, get them excited, but I'm just telling you that there's a little bit more in each one of those guys when it's a U.S. Open. That's just how these guys are built. They're built for the big stages. And, you know, guys, I think Patrick Reed and I think maybe even Bryson, I think they will be impacted negatively by the crowd being out there this week. Those guys tend to be targets, and maybe even Brooks. Maybe some of Bryson's supporters will go over and see if they can't even the scales a little bit with Brooks with some of the things that's been going on with Bryson. So Brooks, I think, tends to thrive a little bit more off of that.
Yeah.
Patrick maybe does a little bit too, but I think Bryson might be distracted this week. I think that's really going to be a wild card that you need to consider. I said it last year. If fans had been at Wingfoot, I'm not sure he'd have come out on top.
Yeah.
Simply because of the target that he becomes, whether warranted or not. There are a certain segment of fans that just kind of like to rattle his cage a little bit, very similar to what Colin Montgomery faced back in the 90s. I was out at major championships in the late 90s, early 2000s, and saw how people treated Colin Montgomery, kind of unwarranted, but it's just he became the guy. And in racing, you know, there's Kyle Busch is a very easy guy to dislike. I think Bryson is kind of becoming like that. He's a very successful guy, but, you know, every sport at times needs a villain. And in some ways, Bryson is becoming that. And this social media battle with Brooks is not helping that at all. And I think the fan element this week can't be underestimated in how it's going to impact negatively the defending champ.
Yeah. Well, and I know you and I have talked a little bit about Xander in particular, and I know we talked on Instagram a little bit about you know, the final pairing at Augusta, and you know, him having a shot there, and then obviously going back to California and having, you know, some good course knowledge and some good history there. Are you on Team Xander for hoisting the trophy this week, or is there somebody else you think has an opportunity?
No, Xander 100%. I think he's played four U.S. Opens. He's finished top six in all of them.
Yeah.
So a bounce here or there in each one of those, and he's already a U.S. Open champ. He is a big game hunter. He just doesn't have the big game trophy yet to validate that title. But, you know, I was with him a little bit this spring. I was with him both Saturday and Sunday in Phoenix, and he was the last guy hitting in every fairway. He got COVID at the end of December, early January, 2020 and 2021, the change of the calendar. And he rededicated himself, if you will, to fitness. And he got a lot stronger really fast and did, you know, golf-centric exercises. He's not all cut up, maybe like, you know, Bryson became, but he's got some extra strength this year that he hasn't had in the past. And he still swings at that same tempo, but the ball's going a little further. And so I think you'll see Xander, this course won't be too big for him. He knows where to miss it, where to hit it, and he knows how to play these events. He's got that 72-hole mindset that you need in the U.S. Open. And And again, the guy's won a FedEx Cup. I mean, he won a tour championship, excuse me. Yep. I think JT won the FedEx Cup that year, but he's won a tour championship. He has won on tour. He's been playing great golf, just coming up a little short. He's kind of in that race with Tony Finau, who's going to get that big victory first. And I think I've been saying it all year, and I see nothing to change my pick of Xander Schauffele, U.S. Open champion 2021.
Yeah, I think people are surprised to see him hit the ball so far with his size, but I mean, he can get it out there with the best of them for sure. So distance is not a problem for him as well. And yeah, that's an interesting tidbit there about, you know, him kind of working through that. One last question for you. And, you know, before the Masters this year, you sent me a message and said, hey, watch out for Will Zalatoris this week. And you couldn't have been more right. Who is your Will Zalatoris of the U.S. Open this year?
Oh man, that's a great question. You know, there's going to be somebody. And there, you know, I remember, I think it was a college sophomore, Ricky Fowler, at the U.S. Open in 2008 that kind of came on the scene there. I don't think he, you know, did all that great, but he kind of announced himself there. I think he shot 2 under or something first round. So, yeah. Which was a 1 or 2 off the lead. So I think you might see an amateur come out. There's a couple of amateurs. You know, Cole Hammer mm-hmm. is in this U.S. Open. Pearson Cootey, maybe a lot of people don't know about Pearson, either is or was just the #1 ranked amateur in the world. He's gonna turn pro soon, coming out of Texas. He is the grandson of Charles Cootey, Masters champion. I say he's got the best, the biggest and most athletic legs in college golf. This kid is built like, I mean, he is built like a linebacker with his lower body, and yep. he's really strong. And so you might see somebody like that maybe people aren't aware of. I think U.S. Open's always a great stage for 1 or 2 amateurs to kind of show up and kind of show people, hey, I'm here, and you're going to be hearing from me again soon. So maybe an amateur this week in Pearson Cootey or Cole Hammer. There's also, you know, Georgia Bulldogs, my team, the team I support, has the most players in the field of any university with 8. And Spencer Ralston, kid that's, you know, going to turn pro pretty soon out of Georgia, really good player, came out of the Atlanta sectional qualifying last week. Spencer Ralston might be a guy to watch. So maybe some amateurs this week. I don't have another Will Zalatoris that I'm pretty sure is going to finish second place like I was back in April. But, yeah, you might see an amateur or two find that board at some point in the early going and maybe have some patience and hang around, and we'll see him on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, Cole and Pearson, obviously both out of the University of Texas, both got through sectional qualifying, I think, in the same group that missed out with Keegan missed out in that qualifying, I believe. I think Duffner did as well. So, yeah, they've obviously got some game.
Well, and Cole, you know, many people forget now, it's been 6 years, but Cole qualified for the U.S. Amateur at Chambers Bay in 2015, played a practice round with Jordan Spieth, who went on to win that week. And Cole's always kind of been inspired by Jordan. And that's a guy we haven't talked about really in this conversation yet. The last time we had a super firm and fast U.S. Open was Chambers Bay, and Jordan was the champ. Yep. So he might be a guy to keep a real close eye on. He's had a recent resurgence, seems to have figured some stuff out, and again, he knows how to win a U.S. Open. So don't be surprised to see Jordan hanging around this weekend.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, Drew, thanks so much for hanging with us for a few minutes. This has been so insightful and just getting us even more pumped than we already are for the U.S. Open. So have a great time down there. Appreciate you jumping on.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. And again, wherever you hear Bones this week, I'll be the yo-yo running around in the fairway. So look out for me.
Yeah, we'll be looking for you.
All right, buddy. All thanks. Right,
thanks.